Well, hey there, Susan here. I hope you're having a fantastic day. And yes, this is the first episode in our new home, C-Suite Radio. And I couldn't be more excited because my guest today is the CEO and founder of C-Suite Radio, Jeffrey Haislett. And I'm going to talk a little bit about Jeffrey's bio here in a moment. But in this show, we do a deep dive into how Jeffrey sees the world. We talk about AI. We talk about why companies fail and what the difference is between a founder who actually makes it and one that talks about making it. And Jeffrey does not hold back, believe me, as many of you know. If you don't know Jeffrey, a little bit about him, he was the CMO at Eastman Kodak. He then left that and became a very well-known media personality and best-selling author. He has the privilege of having been on many, many mainstream media shows. He's appeared on CNBC and Fox and CNN. He has even appeared on The Celebrity Apprentice. He is the primetime television host of C-Suite Network with Jeffrey Haislett and Executive Perspectives Live on C-Suite TV. He's also been on Bloomberg and of many other accomplishments that he has best-selling books, which include Think Big, Act Bigger, The Rewards of Being Relentless, Running the Gauntlet, The Mirror Test, and The Hero Factor: How Great Leaders Transform Organizations and Create Winning Cultures. One of the things about Jeffrey is he is no nonsense. And that's what we appreciate on Raw and Real Entrepreneurship. And before we get into today's show, I do want to mention that this show is about to go to the very next level. So not just from the quality of guests we have incredible founders. You're going to hear at the end of every episode my startup diary. And I am in the weeds of building a startup right now, and I don't hold back. We are enhancing all of our social media platforms. And now we have this brand new home here on C-Suite Radio, but also on Spotify. So I would love for you to share the show. I would love for you to go to susansly.com. Let me know the kind of content you want to hear. Here are the kinds of questions that you're interested in asking founders. And most importantly, I want to hear from you. What is keeping you up at night as an entrepreneur? So with that, let's get into this episode with Jeffrey Haislett, and then stay tuned at the end because I am going to share this week's diary.
This is Raw and Real Entrepreneurship, the show that brings the no-nonsense truth of what is required to start, grow, and scale your business. I am your host, Susan Sly.
Well, what is up, everyone, wherever you are in the world? I hope you're having an amazing day. And I want to first and foremost say this is the very first episode as a new member of the incredible C-Suite Radio Network. And who better to have on the show than the CEO and founder of the C-Suite Network, Jeffrey Haislett. And Jeffrey and I have known of one another for several years. We have several good friends in common. And Jeffrey, first and foremost, I just want to welcome you to our global audience and thank you for being here.
Well, thank you so much for allowing me to join when I'm on the road once again, when I'm always on the road. So I really appreciate it. And it's just an honor to have you as part of one of our headliners on our network. This is great. So welcome.
Well, thank you, Jeffrey. And we're going to dive right in. It is Raw and Real Entrepreneurship. And there are some people out there that right now they're contemplating entrepreneurship, and you and I meet them all the time, and they have a great business idea, and they're, let's just call them a wannabe, not necessarily someone who is going to achieve. And in your expertise, not just as a best-selling author, as a media authority, but as a very seasoned entrepreneur yourself, what is the difference in your opinion between someone who actually achieves and someone who talks a lot about achieving but doesn't necessarily get there?
You know, it's a little bit of tenacity and a little bit of understanding what problem you're trying to solve. A lot of people love to play it. You know, I always talk about folks who they go after business models about fame or about fortune. And a lot of those wannabes are really going after fame. And I always tell and can always find the ones that are really going after fortune. And when I talk about fortune, I'm about talking about solving real problems and doing things on behalf of people by providing great value. And, you know, and I always tell everybody that's where you want to go, because if you can do that, you usually get pretty famous in the process if you want that fame. And if not, you can buy it, you know, later on, and you don't have to start with it. But if someone's going after and they're just talking a story, I give you a great example. One time I'm up in the woods of Canada, this retreat that they used to call, I can't remember the name of, Camp Friendship or something like that. And they had about 300 or 400 people there. And I would go and keynote to this event a couple of times. And I remember one time some guy came up to me and said, well, we're going to do this. And I said, well, what are you really doing? He said, I said, that's just a story. And he goes, no, this is going to happen. I go, no, until it happens, it's a story. And he got real upset with me, but he was like one of those that are what I would call a wannabe. And in terms of, you know, it's one thing to say it and another thing to do it. So while you might say it, go prove to me that you're going to do it. But I could tell from that guy right off the bat, he was never going to do it.
And it's interesting that you mentioned tenacity, because one of the things you're so well known for is your career at Kodak, and you were tenacious. And to the point where that didn't necessarily do you a lot of favors. No. And so if we could go back in time a little bit, what was it like being that tenacious version of yourself when you weren't feeling supported? Because there are a lot of people who listen to the show. I'm not going to name the company names, but you know that we both have a lot of connection in the big tech world. And a lot of friends will take me aside and say, I listen to the show and I want to start a business, but I don't know what to do. And they're listening right now and they have great paying jobs, but they're the tenacious ones. What was that like for you? And what was it that finally, that tipping point that said, I need to leave this situation and go and start and do my own thing?
Well, it's always about conditions of satisfaction. So my leaving it was all about not meeting my conditions of satisfaction of what I want to do. And they have to be mutual when you enter in those things. You know, my third book was Think Big, Act Bigger. And it's the rewards of being relentless. The tenacity is really related to being relentless. And, you know, people who know me know that I'm always relentless in terms of, if I see a great host like yourself, I'm going to keep coming at you to you finally say, okay, you convinced me of the value of what it is. So it is hard. I've always been that person that sticks up for the little guy. I'm always that person who does things for the right reasons, because you're supposed to, the way it's supposed to be done, who lives by values, that I have certain values. And sometimes that's painful to do. Sometimes it costs you money. Sometimes it costs you position, but you know what? I feel better about it myself. And so that's the first thing you really have when you're, you know, running the gauntlet of the corporate world, which was my second book, by the way, because that's really what it's like when you're in those big organizations. Even if you're the chief marketing officer of a Fortune 100 company, and you have the ability to make massive changes, spend millions of dollars, in some cases billions of dollars that I manage, and yet you're running a gauntlet. So you have to understand that's the game you're in. It's rough and tumble. The knives come out, the clubs come out, they beat you from behind, they stab you from the front. Those are the things that you're just going to have to do it. But that's, you know, that's what you got paid for. That's the big boy. That's your big boy pants, your big girl pants. And that's what you're supposed to be doing. And you just need to know those kinds of things going in. And if you don't, man, you're going to be very disappointed. You're going to be extremely tired. But if you know those things, you're going to be ready for the fight. And that just gives you energy. And that's what you have to do day in and day out. That's what it's like. And people don't understand at that corporate level, at that big level, especially when you're driving change in a company that's maybe seen its better days. And yet you're there to help either elongate that portion of time or to help turn it around, hopefully, to, you know, sort of adapt, change, or die. And you just need to know that going in.
Adapt to change or die. So we're going to go get real raw and real here in a minute. You and I were chatting at an event we were both speaking at, and I was sharing with you that in some of my studies at MIT, and the longtime listeners know that I went back to school and at age 47, and I decided to go to MIT because I thought, you know what, I'm a co-founder of an AI company, can learn AI. Yeah. And so one of the case studies we did in business school was actually on Kodak. Yeah. And I've always wanted to ask you this question publicly. So here we go. So I had to defend why Kodak didn't end up being the Instagram of its day. And I said, mm-hmm. it came down to this. Kodak thought digital was a noun and Instagram mm-hmm. thought digital was a verb. And yeah. I get to ask you in front of yeah. thousands of people, what is your opinion? Why do you think Kodak, you know, didn't make it?
They forgot what they were. I mean, I love the analogy Whoa. That you just used. So when you look at Kodak, you go back over its history. It's Jim Collins's hubris of success. You know, they believed their own story. They got stuck in time. They said that we were a film company. When I got there, they would say, we're a film company. We make this little roll of film, which got 90% margins on it. We're the number one at it. We've had the most recognizable logo in the world, most recognizable name, the most favorable company. At one time, they were bigger than Apple. Think about this. I mean, 195,000 employees, $187 billion. I mean, it was a massive, massive company. And yet they would say they're a film company. They were never a film company. They were an emotional technology company. If you think about it, mm-hmm. by the time I got there, they had actually let the trademark on the Kodak Moments go by. And I'm going like, what do you mean you let that expire? Are you kidding me? I said, Kodak is always about, you know, what I call M3I squared, which means they make, they manage, they move images, information. Now, whether that's done on film or whether that's done by a digital camera or motion picture film or in a gallery, in a photo book or whatever it might've been, or on a brochure or a newspaper or a magazine, which they did all of those things, or even in the most personal device in the history of the world, our phones, which they had most of the technology in that phone was Kodak technology with one of the top three trademarkers in the world, patent holders in the world. And yet we're a film company. You're an emotional technology company. They owned that. They had the product that people would actually run back into a burning building to save. Yeah. If you think about it. And so when you have that much emotion in the product, then you need to pull that forward and not yet say, no, we're a film company. All right. And that's where you lose. You get stuck in your stories about the company. In fact, you know, when I remember the first week I got there, they brief you, they do all the stuff, and they were telling me the story that a million people come and look at our photo of the day every day. I left that company, 12, 15 years ago. And yet I was at a conference last year, 14 years later, and someone was still using that fact and still using that on stage. That's a story. And when you start believing your stories, then you got real problems. Then your best days are behind you, not ahead of you.
Yeah, drinking your own, you're drinking your own Kool-Aid, so to speak. And
good, by the way, it's okay to drink that Kool-Aid. You just got to keep making new stuff.
Yeah, and you have been so masterful at the reinvention piece. And I want to talk about that. I do want to fact check something. So when I was presenting my business case, I read that Kodak had actually invested $10 billion in digital, but they still came out with the wrong conclusion. Again, I dialed it down to noun versus verb, right? Like they spent $10 billion and still didn't get it. And
I don't know if it would have been $10 billion, but they certainly didn't get it. Back in 1976, a guy by the name of Steve Sasson invented the digital camera. A cold Christmas night or around Christmas in that just 1976 or 75, 76. Don't quote me. It's been a while. But, you know, he took a photograph, put it on, and he took a digital photograph, a photograph of a photograph. That was the very first digital photograph ever, was of a real photograph of his daughter. And imagine what it was like for him to take this blue box. I know what it was. I used to sit on my desk for a while. I was at Kodak to show people what we passed up. And imagine that you took this camera, this big blue box around and said, look, I've invented the new Kodak Moment. And everyone said, put it away. And because they were so stuck in that story. And so, yeah, it might have been, probably was billions at that time. I mean, we spent a lot of money on research. A lot of our company money was spent on research. They had Kodak Labs, Kodak Research Park. I mean, it's amazing the things that we invented. Or had patents on. I remember I used to make fun of, on April 1st of every year, I used to release things like Kodak's coming out with smelly vision, you know, television you can smell. And then a scientist would come and see me and Mr. Hazel, that's not very funny. I own the patent of that. So I had to always make sure from then on out that I didn't make fun. I had the wink and shoot camera that you would put a camera in your eye lens, and and somebody actually had a patent on that. I mean, it's just amazing the stuff that they would have had.
Yeah, you probably got like a letter from the CIA. It's like, hey, no, we're actually using that and it's deployed.
Yeah, yeah, yes, yeah.
And that's the big piece in terms of entrepreneurship is that there are entrepreneurs, and you and I have both seen them, that they're so married to their idea. They become so closed, and even spending billions of dollars, they're going in the wrong direction. Right. And we saw that with Blockbuster. I remember reading an interview, and the CEO of Blockbuster said, well, people will still come because they like the popcorn.
Yeah. Well,
right?
Jim Keyes is a great guy. He was the CEO of Blockbuster. He's a good friend in the C-suite. You know, he went out, he was also the chairman of and CEO of 7-Eleven as well. So, he's been at the forefront of a lot of things. But, you know, what happens sometimes, it's not so much the stuff that you do. You're stuck with what you got. Okay. Now, can you adapt it? Can you change it? Can you move the organization? Sometimes you can, sometimes you can't. You know, people at Kodak, you come to me all the time and say, Jeff, make it like it used to be. Well, you can't look cool and dress like Elmer Fudd. I mean, you got to make the changes to do that. And so sometimes you're dealt the cards that you are dealt, and you can't make it out, you know? And Blockbuster to some extent, I can remember negotiating with Blockbuster, can we make CDs, movie CDs on our kiosk? You know, because we had these 100,000 kiosks around the world. And I said, why don't you go give us the license, and instead of renting them, you know, let's put them on a CD. And you walk into a CVS, you walk into a Walgreens, and we'll print them, or, you know, all the different shops that we had them in at the time, and still have lots and lots of kiosks out there. Kodak does. And I said, we can also make movies on it, but we were never able to do that. So, you know, it would have been nice to be able to do some of those things.
Well, and you just, you know, with being dealt the hand you've got, so you are a person who, there's a children's book that I used to read my kids, and it's called Something from Nothing. And it takes place during the Holocaust, and there's a little boy, and he has a jacket, and all of these things happen, and his grandma keeps changing it into something until it becomes a vest, and then it becomes this little scrap of cloth, and he's got a button. And for each iteration of the jacket, there was always something from nothing, a story, and the value of that. And as I study your career, Jeffrey, you've always been able to say, okay, this is the hand I'm dealt right now. I wouldn't play poker with you. The hand I've dealt right now, and you somehow managed to turn it into something even greater when the average person actually wouldn't. So what is your thinking behind that? You know, when you're in a situation where the odds are stacked against you, you seem to figure out a way to do something really great. And that's not conventional thinking. So what is the recipe for that?
It's survival. It's the way I grew up. You know, I grew up in a trailer park, grew up with not much, you know, in terms of what we had, not much on the education side. You just learn to do those things. You know, moved out of the house when I was 16. So I've been on my own ever since, you know, just things that you just learn, and you don't know it's any different. You don't know that it's that tough. You really don't. You're in it, you know. And I have been lucky in my career, as I look back, to be in some of the most momentous decisions that have ever been done in business, and be at the right place at the right time, and, you know, go be a judge on Celebrity Apprentice, you know, go do my own television show on Bloomberg, you know, even when this isn't eye candy. I mean, I was doing all these kinds of things, and I was really lucky to have done all the things I've done. But I'm always looking like, okay, you know, my book, Think Big, Act Bigger. How can I make this bigger? How can I make this done? But I also keep it pretty simple. My father-in-law, who was a rancher and farmer back in South Dakota, you know, he would say, how do you do this when you're managing billions of dollars? I said, I just take the zeros away. You know, if it's a good decision back in my business in Sioux Falls, South Dakota, it's a good decision on Wall Street. And so that's how I always looked at things. And so I never let the things intimidate me or sit in a room thinking like, oh, these people are bigger or smarter than I am, which they might have been bigger and smarter than I am. But I just thought, well, I said the same way they said. I got the same shoes, same pants, same everything, roughly the same educations, you know, or the same experiences. So they're no better or different than I am. I'm just going to go do it. And that's what it was. And a lot of it was like, you learn on the fly. I mean, you step into a role like that and, you know, nobody gives you a game book. No one tells you, you know, here's the game plan. You got to figure this out. I remember sitting in the room and going, hey man, this place is pretty screwed up in here. Somebody should do something. And I looked around and went, oh, that's me. You know, and I mean, because no one tells you really what to do. That you're, you know, there's some guidelines and some other things. You don't meet with the CEO every day, who's your boss, you know, my boss and CEO and chairman. We maybe got together once or twice a month, and that was usually by phone, you know. So I didn't have experience at that level, like, you know, hundreds of billions of dollars. But, you know, you learn pretty quick. You learn fast.
Yeah. So it's interesting because when you and I were speaking at this event recently, the whole focus was on AI. Mm-hmm. And you are very excited. You are, let's say, if we took the top 500 CEOs in the United States, the Yale study of these CEOs, they're not optimistic about AI. They love the cost savings. They love how that looks on the balance sheet, but they aren't feeling optimistic. But you and I are cut from a similar cloth in that we're seeing opportunity. So sure. What is it that, how, if someone could look at the world right now, Jeffrey, through your eyes, what would they see? Because you're the guy who's like, okay, I'm on the corner. Brandon Steiner is a mutual friend of ours. And, yep. You know, Steiner has been on the show. He's one of my close friends. He's been on the show several times. And Steiner's the guy I want on a street corner in New York. We've lost everything. We have nada. Yeah. We don't even have shoes.
Hey, Steiner wrote a book that says you got to have balls. I mean, mm-hmm. He wrote a book that says you got to have balls. Now, he was talking about baseballs, right? But the analogy of that, and that's what you have to have here. I mean, think about this, Susan. Is AI going away? No, it's here. The doors are open. You better get used to this. Now, you may not like it. It doesn't make a difference. You're going to have to deal with it. So would you rather run and hide or run into it? I'm one of those people, I'd rather run right into it and run as hard and fast as I can. And what can I do to influence it? Because let's be very clear. AI needs some bumpers. We need to, I mean, there's some good stuff and there's some bad stuff. And we need to make sure we understand the implications on both sides of that. And we need to say, hey, how should we interject the human element into this? How should we interject what I would call the guidelines to keep it in a fair, you know, playing field for all the companies that are out there? I mean, because AI is going to do some horrific things. It's going to do some great things. Don't get me wrong. I mean, I used it today. Help me draft these letters. Help me draft these social media posts, all these kinds of things. Very good. Talked to my staff about it. Said, yeah, I need you to go do this. Go do it and do it with these kind of parameters, blah, 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 blah. But at the same time, you know, AI, somebody's going to use AI to blow up somebody's company, to release information that's so fast, that looks so real, that they're going to have such a material change, the stock's going to drop from way up here to boom, and it's going to put them out of business. Or it's going to do it to a politician, or it's going to do it to some innocent person that's out there. We need to have guidelines around that, and we need to be thinking about it. So you better not put your, you know, head in your ass. And you better not put it in the sand. You better get it up and get it moving. And you better get Congress and our leaders to get behind doing something about this as fast as possible. Because it's, I mean, I don't even want to go into the horrific things that can occur, which you know could occur. Mm-hmm. You're a smart person. You went to MIT. I can't even spell MIT, okay? So, you know, we need people like you and others who are going to say, hey, good, the bad, and the ugly, and what do we got to do to protect it and make sure, and use it for good, and use it for good.
Absolutely. And knowing that the people who aren't necessarily favorable to certain countries are not going to use it for good. So at some point, AI has got to be the thing that combats the AI. I want to share with you a story. Maybe you've already done it, but I'll share with you something. So every week, my staff, they're putting out the, you know, everyone who listens to the show knows, like, I have an AI startup, but I also, you know, have the show producing content, and they would send me drafts, Jeffrey, and I'd be like, you know, I wouldn't say that. So I said to them, I called a meeting and I built an LLM with them live. And I trained it to speak like me. Yeah. I said, because I don't have time to review your drafts anymore, run it through. And they were a little skeptical at first. And then they went, oh, this is great. So I just saved myself all this time, because now they can produce content that sounds like me, that it's going to take, and it's going to take the We'll use Otter. It's going to take the transcript of this show. It's going to, they're going to put it into the GPT that I built. It's going to spit out exactly in this tone how we want it and how we want it now for C-suite radio, leveling up, going to a new level, because I didn't have the time. And to your point, that is a fantastic use of my time to build a GPT and do that. And all of my friends who are best-selling authors, I'm like, why wouldn't you just build a GPT, feed it how you write, how you speak, and then, you know, one and done. To your point, I'm not seeing political ads here in the United States where we're, where anyone's really talking about AI. Like, to your point,
it's not a point to where most, it's not to the general populace where most people won't understand it or use it, but it certainly, it can affect people without question. By the way, the language on this is very good for AI. I mean, I constantly do a letter, and then when I'm done the letter, and I'll do it in the voice of Jeffrey Hazlett. If you have enough content out there about you, but I would not use it to create my own personal avatar and then feed it the script and then let it, this be not me, but an avatar speaking to you, an AI. And I love, by the way, let's also cheer those companies that are doing what I consider to be the right thing, such as Dove, which recently announced that they're not going to use AI enhanced models in all of their commercials, which I, you know, fantastic. They're using real people to do real ads to buy real products. Awesome. Not an AI enhanced to make it look like a false beauty or, you know, and there are false benefits as a part of it. So, again, these are the things that we need to be thinking about. We need to have good, clear, healthy debate about it and transparency so that we can have these kinds of discussions. This is the stuff that happens in the C-suite all the time. You know, I lead the C-suite network, and certainly these are topics on C-suite TV, C-suite radio, C-suite book club. You know, we want to continue to do that, but you've got to have these kind of conversations going on in the C-suite, or there's going to be bigger problems.
Exactly. Because if you're not having the conversations, your employees are using it and they're representing your company and maybe not the way you want. Final question. You mentioned the C-suite, right? And we talk about the C-suite media and all of these different divisions, what happened with acquiring the Wall Street Journal bestseller list. So what is the vision?
Well, we just been talking about it for the last 20 some minutes, and that's a trusted platform. You know, I knew the value of getting together with lots of C-suite executives when I was officially in the big C-suite, the Fortune 100, to be able to pick up the phone and call and say, hey, how are you doing this or how are you doing that? And, you know, like I always say, billion-dollar companies like to talk to billion-dollar companies, and that's a fact. And so I would have a lot of the CMOs call me and say, Jeff, how are you getting out of the Olympics? How are you changing your NASCAR deal? How are you changing your IndyCar deal? How are you changing your Disney deal? You know, and so forth and so on, when people were really going through some tough times in that 2008, 2009, 2010 time period. And so the value of having a trusted network is critical. Not a networking organization. Anybody can have a networking organization. But how do you have a trusted network where people can use the platform to be able to grow their business, you know, in a trusted manner? And that's really, truly what our benefit is in the C-suite network. So that's where we're going.
And I love it. And one of the things that, you know, we were at a C-suite event together and talking about the vision, Trish talking about so many of the initiatives and the opportunities, especially for C-suite leaders. And so Jeffrey didn't ask me to do this, but it's my unsolicited plug, because everyone who listens to the show is an entrepreneur. So you're a CEO of your own company, that you really need to explore what it is we're doing with the C-suite, because here's the thing, and you know, Harvey has always said this, Harvey McKay, you know, everyone has a book in them, everyone has a story, but do you have a platform for that story? And one of the things we're seeing with, especially with tech CEOs, is that there has to be a face of the company. You said the word trust. Do you trust a faceless company? No, look at Jensen Huang at NVIDIA. Jensen keynotes all of their GTCs. He is out there very publicly on social media, and you can't hide behind your website anymore. People want to know who is at the helm. And I love, Jeffrey, what you're doing. And so I'm just so honored to be here and collaborate. And we're going to have a really fun year.
Well, thank you. You know, you sell you sell the company, sell the company, you sell you. And I don't know if you could separate the two. You know, I want to know who's leading that company and how they're leading it, what their values are, if they're anything like mine or not. It might mean I might not even like all the values that they hold or the things that they believe. Like, say, for instance, Chick-fil-A. Chick-fil-A doesn't open on Sunday, but you know, I would love to have a good chicken sandwich on Sunday, but I'll still go and buy from them. You know, I let them overcome that. So it's okay to have differences on our values, different kinds of beliefs, and still do business if you respect the people that are leading the company.
And shout out to Chick-fil-A. They have an amazing vision to be the most caring company in the world. And to stand on that vision, Jeffrey, and just like with C-suite, to be the most trusted network in the world, and to stand on that and know that it's not going to be for everyone, right? Yeah. And that's
yep,
okay.
That's right.
And yeah. So, Jeffrey, thank you so much for being on our first show on C-suite yeah. Radio. Like, hello.
Well, welcome and welcome. You know, it's where we listen to business every single day. That's where, or if you come to C-suite TV, where you watch business every single day. So thank you very much for being a headliner on our network. Congratulations on being in as part of this trusted community. It's fantastic.
Well, thank you. Well, for everyone, if today has provided value, which we know it has, we would love a 5-star review, an honest review. And if you have enjoyed the show, please do share it on social, tag Jeffrey and I. And I actually respond to all of our own tagging. So it is me. It's not an AI. So do tag us, give us a shout out. We would absolutely love it. So Jeffrey, thanks again for being here. And to all of our listeners, God bless. Go rock your day. And I will see you in the next episode. All right, friends. Well, hopefully you enjoyed the episode with Jeffrey. I know I did. I love his tenacity. I love his candor. And I love our discussion on AI and this whole concept of there are a lot of opportunities in AI, but also the responsible use of AI, which is tremendous. So in this week's diary, we have a lot going on at the pause. So we are working on standing up our product. And so that means with a DevOps team, that means with data science. We just onboarded a data scientist who I have worked with for several years. And honestly, he's one of these people that when I think of him or I say his name, my heart lights up. He's just such an incredible human. And when you think about menopause, you're like, well, why are there men working on menopause? Well, it does start with MEN. They're incredible men who are working on this project because menopause affects everyone. And menopause is one of the only health conditions that is inevitable for women. It's inevitable. Cancer is not inevitable. Dementia is not inevitable. Menopause is inevitable. And how women navigate it can be very lonely. It can also be something that is different to each individual woman. And that's where AI has a zone of genius, because AI can help to tailor those recommendations to individual women based on their health histories, based on their cultural background, based on their age, based on whether they've had kids or not have kids. So I have been finding myself putting in very long days. And in addition to this, we recently purchased a house in a whole other state. So my husband has been at that house unpacking, and I'm here with our youngest daughter. So I'm standing up a company. I've got an existing business. We just are moving our whole podcast to C-Suite Radio, and I'm single momming it. As soon as I'm done this diary, I'm going to be changing and heading to my daughter's track meet. And it's a lot. And on top of it, my dad, who is 84, and I've spoken about him on the show. If you're new to the show, he is going through some health challenges. He's in assisted living. His house is just sold, and I'm an only child. And so I've got to go clean up his house, deal with his finances, and I'm his power of attorney. And I mention all of this because we look at the glamorous side of entrepreneurship, but we forget that entrepreneurs are sometimes parents. They're someone's child. They've got other obligations. Maybe they're also working full time. And to be very candid, it is challenging. And so one of the things that I've been doing is really committing to going to bed earlier. That is a big thing, because I know that I'm more effective when I get my sleep. And also knowing that I love the luxury when I have a whole whack of time to go to a hot yoga class and get a run in and everything. And my husband said to me, you know, Susan, you wrote a book called Organize Your Life. Right now for you, your workouts need to be productive, not necessarily lengthy. And so I've been rethinking how I do everything. And so I'm, You know, I feel really excited about all of the momentum we have. It's tremendous. You know, we're still fundraising, we're building out there marketing. I just got asked to speak twice on the stage at HPE Discover. I'm going to be speaking at AI Med, Dr. Anthony Chang's conference at the end of May. And so there's a lot of great things going on, and I'm taking care of my dad, and I'm a mom, and. So, you know, I guess the big message for this week's diary is it's okay. You don't have to be perfect. You definitely are not alone. We're all on our journey. We've all got different things that we're dealing with. And the biggest thing I would say is just be vulnerable and be truthful and tell your partners, tell your employees. Yes, you need to be strong, because especially if you're the CEO, you have to be that guiding light. But I think there's more strength in just sharing your truth, because at the end of the day, this whole concept that we all have to be perfect is, one, it's exhausting, but one, it is so disingenuous, because there are no perfect people. There are just perfectly imperfect people. So anyway, I love you all, and I hope you're enjoying the new show format, and I look forward to sharing next week's diary with all of you.
Hey, this is Susan, and thanks so much for listening to this episode on Raw and Real Entrepreneurship. If this episode or any episode has been helpful to you, you've gotten at least one solid tip from myself or my guests, I would love it if you would leave a 5-star review wherever you listen to podcasts. After you leave your review, go ahead and email reviews@susansly.com. Let us know where you left the review. And if I read your review on air, you could get a $50 Amazon gift card. And we would so appreciate it, because reviews do help boost the show and get this message all over the world. If you're interested in any of the resources we discussed on the show, go to susansly.com. That's where all the show notes live. And with that, go out there, rock your day. God bless. And I will see you in the next episode.